Right, hello everybody, and welcome to this is for me this will be February's PBIC audio recording, and today I have a very special guest with me, and he is very special as well, in every sense of the word. this guy's been my mentor, helped me kick my business on no end. I actually first came across you, John, so to speak, in a heard you on a Paul Moore podcast, and I thought, who is this obnoxious twat? I must find out more about him. And I've sort of been hooked on you ever since, and you know, you've been a huge inspiration to me. So welcome, John McCulloch, the evil bald genius.
Hello. I thought I was more like your tormentor, to be honest.
bit of both. I think you have to be a bit of a tormentor,
right,
don't you?
I certainly am an obnoxious arsehole. I won't deny that. Dan Kennedy said the same thing, so who am I to argue with him?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, John, tell the folks a little bit about, very quickly, what you do.
Well, I guess at the heart of it, I'm a marketing guy, copywriter, but I'm more in a mentoring, coaching role now these days. We have been for the last 5 years. So I guess the label I would give myself is the small business advocate, because although I'm capable of doing it, I choose not to ever work with large businesses because it's just too painful. I suppose I would do it in the right circumstances, but if I did, I would have to be speaking to the decision maker. So yeah, you can imagine if, say, and this is actually pertinent to what we're saying, because it's about position, saying what I will and will not do. If I was, say, going to work with, I don't know, Virgin Galactic, for instance, I would want to be speaking to Richard Branson, otherwise I wouldn't bother.
Yeah.
Because, as you know yourself, if you, I'm sure you do anyway, if you've got someone keep going, well, I'm not sure we can do that, I have to run it past the boss, you're there for fucking ever.
Yeah.
Soul destroying.
Yeah, you want the organ grinder.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to specifically talk about positioning, partly because it's your kind of specialized subject. I mean, you have lots of specialized subjects, but you've kind of made this one your own, and it's something that hardly anybody teaches. Obviously, I talk about it a bit, but that's because I'm influenced by you, you know, and I'm sort of live and breathe it mainly because I'm influenced by you. So why does nobody know about this positioning, and what is it? What would you say your positioning is?
Well, I think, to answer the first question, why don't people know about it? I think it's a little bit like a fish swimming in water probably doesn't know about water. because nobody does it, although by having no positioning, that is positioning itself. We all have it.
Yeah.
Okay. We all advertise ourselves to the world in some way, whether we choose to or not. And there's an old, you know, the rock band Rush, there's an old Rush song, Free Will, that says, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Well, if you don't choose your positioning, you'll get the default, and that will be pretty much the same as what's going on around you, because you tend to mimic and ape the people around you. And in the case of, say, a dog walker, you'll probably look around at other dog walkers and do what they do, because that's what you do when you're a dog walker.
Yeah.
So you do have, whoever you are and whatever business you're in, you have some positioning. Now, you either let it happen by default or you choose it. So to say nobody knows about it is probably because it's one of those things you just don't think about. I mean, like, we all walk, apart from people with no legs or in wheelchairs. We don't think about it. We just do it. So I think it's like that. Now, the second question, what is it? I kind of said it a minute ago. It's how you are perceived by your target market and others. I often, and I'll probably do it today as well, I often use the dating analogy in my work, because it's something that everyone can relate to. Because one of the problems is, if I start talking about, say, my own work and positioning as a copywriter, there's a chance that people say, in your industry, dog walkers, say, well, that's okay, he's a copywriter, but I'm a dog walker, so it's different. But everyone can relate to dating. And in truth, it's exactly the same. Because I don't see any, I will say, if you understand the dating game, the mating game, you understand marketing. Because it's all about how you present yourself to your potential mate, or in the case of business, your customer. So that's what positioning is. It's how do they perceive you? And sometimes, a little bit like dating, you've got to treat them mean to keep them keen. you've seen that meme I posted on Facebook the other day about the feminist bloke who's still waiting to get laid.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
I think
well,
I did.
It's a little bit like that. If you're in business and you try to please everybody in the hope of getting business, you won't. And people will walk all over you. In the same way as a man who's a pushover is not particularly attractive to a woman, and I can't speak to the way around because I'm not attractive to men. I know that. Sorry, that's the complete policy. You know what I just said. A man who's a pushover is not very attractive to women. And yeah. In the same way, a woman who's, say, too easy and too lackluster and if I say wet, I don't mean it like it sounds. they are not attractive to men either. You know, we all like a little bit of challenge and maybe something to come up against and someone to challenge us, to push back if we're a bit of an arsehole, to tell us how things are going to be. You know, I don't think any of us like a pushover. And we certainly don't like cowards as a species.
No, definitely not.
A bit of a long-winded answer there.
I hear you. I think it. I know. Well, if people don't know, you're a massive dog lover as well, aren't you, John? And another one of our interests that brought us together, probably. But there's a lot of similarities with the relationship you have with your dog as well, isn't it? Almost, do you know what I mean? You can't, it's about rules, I suppose, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's about having rules in your business as well, isn't it?
Yes, and Dan Kennedy, the dog analogy is a good one, actually. Dan Kennedy, who's my mentor, really, has been for many years. He passed on a quote, and he either didn't give it or I don't remember the original source. But his quote is, people are walking around with an umbilical cord in their hand, looking for somewhere to plug it in. A little bit like a dog. If you don't take control of your dog, and you are not the pack leader, so to speak, the dog will do it. And of course, the dog is not qualified to be the leader of a pack in today's societies, human society. Well, the same with your customers and your clients. If you don't take control of them, they will take control of you. If you don't call the shots, they will.
Yeah.
And you think, well, if I'm compliant and I do as I'm told and I bend over backwards to please my customers, they'll be grateful. Well, they fucking won't.
No.
They'll treat you even worse. Mm-hmm. Because it's a strange quirk of the human race. And that is, if somebody's very compliant and very obedient to us, rather than being grateful, we actually resent it. And instead of backing off a little bit and treating them well, we will actually treat them worse.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like bullies. You know, a bully, if you back down to a bully, you are making a lot more trouble for yourself. If you stand up to a bully, then they might not respect it, but they will fear you and they won't do it as much.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, this is not a universal, but it's generally true. Mm-hmm.
I think I've been talking about price quite a bit. We'll talk about price later on, but we talk about price quite a bit in my group. And I always give the example of when I'd first, I've been premium from day one, but when I first put my prices up again, it was the people who I had bent over backwards for, who I'd maybe given a little discount to, who I'd, you know, I'd been a bit silly with, really. It was my own fault. It was my own doing. But they were the people who fucked me over, kind of thing, you know. And I got what I deserved, basically. Do you know what I mean? Just backing up your example.
I'm not sure about what you deserve, but you certainly got what you asked for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And people, as a general rule, people will treat you in exactly the way you allow them to. Mm-hmm. So if you've got, say, a customer or a spouse or a friend or anybody shouting and swearing at you, and you allow that to continue and you don't stop it, it will continue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and yeah. I think this is something that certainly with the pet industry, pet professionals, be it walkers, trainers, or whatever, when they come to me, I don't feel like they're really running their business. Do you know what I mean? Their business is definitely kind of running them, you know, and they're certainly not getting paid the right kind of money for what they are. But again, a lot of that comes down to the positioning, doesn't it? And having the rules Absolutely. In your business and stuff.
I mean, the thing is, even in my business, I'm one of the good guys because I'm decent. I am good. I'm not nice.
Yeah.
So sometimes if I get a vendor, a good example is the video guy several years ago. I've gone through several in the end. Well, I'll tell you why I've gone through several in a minute. But I'll start with the video guy. And usually they are so cheap. So I'll work with them for a while, and I'll say to them after I've got their first quote, say, you're too cheap. Put your price up. And I would prefer them to do that, because then if I'm paying them more, I can be sure I'm getting a better service from them, or at least I can expect a better service, because they're not running around. You know, it's easier for them to do one £3,000 video job than three £1,000 video jobs. And then I've got that, you know. But what happens is that it's happened every time. So, well, almost every time so far, Alex, if you're listening, they've all in the past, they've all priced themselves out of the market. They start charging more than it's worth to me. I'm not saying they're charging too much.
Yeah,
that's not what I'm saying, because they're entitled to charge that. But they start to go on. They start to charge more than it's worth to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Which is fine. That's just the nature of the beast. That's perfectly acceptable. And the thing is, price makes a statement as well about quality. Another good example of it is this. And this isn't so much positioning, although pricing and positioning do tend to go hand in hand. Because if you're charging a lot of money, that says something about you.
Yeah.
Whether it's correct or not, it speaks to your ability. It speaks to the quality of what you do and how you do it. It speaks to your experience. Okay. Mm-hmm. And a good example. I've had problems with my punch bag in the bar. I've got a bracket.
That's not a euphemism.
No. It's the wife, a stringer from a beam, you know. I've got this punch bag and I've got a bracket, and all it requires is 6 bolts. Now, I'm not very good at DIY. There's various reasons for it. I'm very clumsy and cack-handy because of the Asperger's. That's one of the traits. But all it requires is 6 bolts. Now, even I can do 6 bolts. So I look around. I try to find my drill. Couldn't find it anywhere. And bearing in mind, we've got a fairly large farmhouse, but it's not large enough for all the stuff. Because there's loads of stuff is still packed in boxes. I thought, rather than spend half a day looking for a drill, I'll just go and buy another one. It's only like 50 quid or something. So when I bought this drill, and a drill bit. Now, the walls in the barn are made of concrete blocks, but it's not the kind of smooth concrete where you can get a decent hole. It's the lumpy stuff. So the holes, it's just a fucking nightmare. So I cannot get these holes. If I can drill, say, 4 of them, then the other ones won't go in the right place, or the drill gets deflected, so it kind of goes off at an angle, so I can't get the bolt in, or it can break off, so the hole is now massive and too big for the fixing. It's just a nightmare. So I think, what the fuck am I going to do? I mean, someone suggested to me, get a handyman. Well, it never even occurred to me. It was like a blind spot. I just didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't even think about getting a handyman. So I Googled one, a local guy, sent him a couple of messages. We went back and forth, and he eventually phoned me. And I says, can you come up and do this? It's just 6 bolts. I didn't even ask him how much he was going to charge. And I was thinking, oh, what would you think? What would you imagine?
What, to do that?
Yeah.
God, I don't know. 40 quid, 50 quid? I don't know. I've no idea.
Yeah, so I thought between 50 and 100 euro, yeah, it'd be reasonable. Okay? But I didn't ask him about this, and I just told him what it was. He said, I can't do it next week. And we went through, and right at the end, he says, can you just give me a rough idea, ballpark, of how much it's going to be so I can just get the cash out of the bank to pay you? And he says, well, it's only about a half an hour job, and I normally charge 20 euro an hour. So he's going to charge me 10 euro to come 3 miles out of town, because he's in the town. 3 miles out of town, spend half an hour in my barn on this fucking god-awful concrete wall, putting this bracket up, and then going home again. And I said, well, let's just make it around 20. I don't want to, let's not fuck about it. It's 20 euro. And he says, yeah, that's great. And I'm thinking, for fuck's sake, you could have charged me 100, and I wouldn't have blinked.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, fine, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. So he's basically is at least underpriced himself by 5 times. Now, if it was something a bit more complicated, say, I don't know, laying a concrete path, which you want to look fairly decent. I mean, this is just bracket on a wall. How wrong can he go? It'll either be up there or it won't be. But if it was something that needs to be a bit more aesthetic and maybe required a bit more skill, bearing in mind he's charging for time and not for the job.
Yeah.
So I'm not paying for his skill or anything else. I'm just paying for his time. If it had been a more involved job that required more skill and more attention to detail, say, I'd have probably turned him down at 20 euro now, because it's not enough.
No. Yeah.
I'd be thinking, well, what kind of, say, painter and decorator, or what kind of artisan am I going to get for fucking 20 quid an hour? No thanks. I'll go and find someone more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think on the, and people tend to take a pride in like their low prices as well, don't they? You know, like telling a story the other day about we moved to the farmhouse, we've got like some coal fires in the sitting room, some log fires. And so I get the coal and the logs delivered, you know. But obviously we don't use any coal from like over the summer months. So when I rang the guy again in like September, October last year, we charge us like 30 quid for two 15k sacks, and it's like dirt cheap. But he straight away was like, it's the same price, it's the same price, you know. And like, I mean, I'd have happily paid him 50, 60 quid originally, you know. This is like 2 years ago, but you know, I would have at least expected him to, well, I suppose it's just because we're in a different mindset, I suppose, aren't we? But you know, it was like this, he had to get the fact in that the prices were exactly the same straight away.
I know, I don't understand it. I mean, I've got endless stories. We bought the Land Rover about 18 months ago, and we're sitting there, we're about to sign, and the guy jumps up and says, oh, we'd already agreed to pay full price, you know, 45,000-50,000 euros or something. He says, oh, you've not traded in a car, I'll see what I can do about the price. And I just looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and he runs off, comes back, oh, we've knocked 1,700 euro off the price, is that okay? Of course it's okay. We didn't have to, but fine, I can think of a better way to spend that, you know. Midget porn or something. My accountant, he gave us a big bill, and because it was bigger than anything else he'd ever given us, he knocked a couple of thousand euro off it. The hotel we do, Elita, I hired a room, and it's 150 euro, because it was like an offshoot room, a breakout session, and it was 150 euro a day. So we can have it for 75. I didn't even ask for a discount.
Yeah.
Didn't want
yeah.
one. Don't care. But they do it anyway. And like, I don't know, they seem to think that giving you a discount is doing you a favour. Well, it's not really.
No.
Well, I suppose it isn't. It's a nice thing to do, but it's unnecessary.
Yeah, it is. And I think I was just thinking about when you were talking about the guy putting the bolts in the roof and, you know, charging for the hour and stuff. And then I've certainly with my guys who are listening to this, we're dealing with dogs, you know. We're dealing with people's most prized possession in life, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? They love their dogs more than their kids, you know, and you're worried about charging enough money. You know, you're in fear of charging enough money, too much money to walk the dog or to train the dog, which, you know, it's something that like, this is their most, you know, it's not, I mean, that putting the bolt up for you was important, wasn't it? But it wasn't as important as your fucking dog. Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
So yeah, so I just, you know, I think we certainly with my guys, we underestimate actually what a life changing service that we offer people.
Well, it does change people's lives, and the thing is, not only are higher prices often more attractive, but you can do yourself real damage with a low price or a discount. I was looking for a present for my wife, and I'm going back about probably 10, 12 years now. We were still in the UK at the time. We live in Ireland now, as you know, but your listeners don't until now. I was looking for a present, and I was in this shop in Ipswich, and I looked at this carved wooden Buddha, because my wife likes those, and it was only like 50 quid or something. And I just picked it up and looked at it, and the woman yelled across the store, oh, you can have that for 25 if you want it. And I just put it down and walked out, because I thought that was actually a present for my wife from the children. Of her stepchildren, and I want it to be something a little bit special. Well, you've just destroyed any specialness about it by offering a huge discount on it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she lost the sale. Like, funnily enough, that business went out of business about 6 months later.
Yeah.
I wrote about it at the time in my daily email, and I think I gave it 5 or 6 months, and it actually went out of business quicker than I predicted,
yeah.
Which was quite amusing, but sad for them, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, and easily avoidable. Forgot what I was going to say now, but I'll go back to talking about price and positioning, because, like, you know quite a bit about my business because you've been helping me for years. And but when I started my business, I purposefully went in at high end. You know, I purposefully charged kind of twice as much as everybody else. Like, you know all this, and my guys know it as well. But something I didn't realize was, which you touched upon it before, I sort of inherited. I mean, I didn't have a clue what premium positioning was until I met you. You know, and obviously now it's something that I practice all the time, but I kind of inherited a lot of the premier positioning traits just by going in higher price, you know. And when I was checking out these Facebook groups, and all these dog walkers and trainers were on there, like, were bitching and moaning about their clients and the shitty dogs that they were walking, and, you know, the crappy prices and the long hours they were working. And I was thinking, well, why the fuck's that happening? Do you know what I mean? Why are they getting all this shit? And I had instantly just avoided all that just by having my prices high.
Yeah, I mean, there are no downsides to charging higher prices. Again, if we look at the maths, you can perhaps do this in your newsletter or something and keep in the circle. And it's perhaps difficult to follow in a spoken thing like this. But the fact is, in most industries, say, a 35% markup is about right. So you buy something into your business at 100 quid and you sell it 135. That's about right. It's not, you know, most businesses can sustain that. For a service industry like yours and mine, our margins are bigger, so the effect is less pronounced, but it's still huge. If you increase your prices by 10%, that's fuck all, really. Mm-hmm. Your profits on a 35% markup increase by nearly 40%, because your extra £13.50 on your 135 is all profit. Mm-hmm. So your profit is now, instead of being 35, it's £48.50. And people don't even when you show them the graphs and stuff, which I can send if you want to share them with people, mm-hmm. even if you show them the graphs, they still don't accept it, even though they know it's true. Mm-hmm. A 10% price increase makes a huge difference, because it's all profit. And even if you lose some customers, which you won't, but even if you do, you lose the ones you don't want anyway, because they're price buyers. And you can afford to lose, again, I've got graphs for this, you can afford to lose almost a large percentage, it depends on the price rise in your market, but again, on the 35%, you can afford to lose a fairly substantial percentage of your business and still make more money. Well, you know, imagine that means you make the same amount of money for working 4 days a week as five. Isn't that a good deal?
Yeah.
Because that fifth day you can either spend getting more high quality clients to increase your income, or just working on your business in your office, doing marketing, thinking of ways to give better value to your existing customers that are paying the higher fees. There is no fucking downside at all. It's even better for your customers. It might not be obvious in the dog walking thing, but if for instance, say healthcare is a big one, because healthcare providers don't like to charge a lot of money for the most part, because in this country and in the UK, they seem to have this socialist mentality where everyone's entitled to free healthcare. Well, you're not. You're not entitled to free healthcare, and sometimes you're not entitled to free anything else that requires somebody else's labour. And they are reluctant to charge high prices because people can't afford it. Well, trust me, you know, I just had my eyeballs replaced, well, my lenses replaced. Trust me, once I've been told I've got cataracts, whether I could afford it or not, I was going to have those fucking things replaced. You know, when something's important to you, you will pay what's required. This is why people live in council houses and piss and moan about having no money and can't afford school dinners. That's why they've got late model cars, satellite television, smoke cigarettes, and go down the pub every night, because that's what they want. They don't want to pay for school dinners. They want to smoke the cigarettes and they want to drink the beer. So people will afford what they want to pay for. And if they do, if they're paying for something they want very much, you are doing them a favor by charging them more, because they're more committed to it. In healthcare, it means someone who's paid a lot of money to have their eyes, their lenses replaced, or their hip replaced, or something else, okay, or to go on a diet with a PT, if they spent a lot of money to do it, they're more likely to be compliant and therefore get better results.
Yeah.
Now, in your world, if someone pays you more to look after and, by definition, pretty much train their dog during the day, well, they will be more likely, one, you can deliver a better service because you've got fewer dogs and you can spend more time with the ones you work with. So the dogs get more hands-on training. So the customer gets a better result at the end. But also, if they spent loads of money getting you to teach the dog to do these things, they are more likely to follow through with what you tell mm-hmm. them to follow through with.
Yeah.
Because they spent all this money doing it.
Yeah. They're quite literally more invested, aren't they, in it, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
There is no downside at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it applies. The training example is a good one that you've given. I think for walking and grooming and stuff as well, it's like, you know, if they think your dog, if they think their dog's having a good time enjoying a walk or a groom at £15, then they're going to think they're enjoying it £5 more if they pay you 20. They just are, aren't they? You know, you're providing, you provide a great service and stuff, of course. But when they're, something else, John, when, I think this is something a lot of people fear, and it never happens. When you increase your prices, and sometimes the more dramatically that you do increase your prices, you become more attractive to people who didn't see you before. Has been my experience. All the time, you know, there are people in your town now. It doesn't matter if you're a dog walker or a hairdresser, does it? I suppose, but there are people in your town now who aren't interested in your business because the price is almost putting them off, isn't it?
Yes, you're too cheap.
Yeah, you're too cheap.
Several years ago, and again, I'm going back about 15 years now, I went to Chicago on one of these Dan Kennedy events. I think it was the first one I went to. I'm not going to name the website because it's probably not appropriate, but I remember speaking to a guy who's since gone on to make tens of millions. He's very successful. And I spoke to a guy there who was selling a website franchise in the UK. And it was based in each town. And the franchise was £5,500. And he couldn't give them away. People just didn't want them. He took one piece of advice from Dan Kennedy and increased the price to £55,000. Well, he then couldn't keep up with demand. Because people thought, hey, a £5,500 or a £5,000 franchise, it can't be worth much. But if he's charging me 55 grand for this, it must be worth a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how it works. And I know it makes no sense. You know, logically, it doesn't make sense, but we are not logical creatures. We are emotional creatures.
Yeah. I've noticed a similar thing in my own business recently.
Take my business, okay? If I said to you, I'm going to write you a 20-page sales letter and do a load of postcards, and we'll have some one-on-one phone calls, and I'll help you with your marketing campaign, and I'm going to charge you 50 quid, you're just going to laugh at me. But if I tell you I'm going to charge you, say, 35 grand, you'll listen. You might not go for it because you might be able to afford it. But if you're serious about it and you're playing at that level in business, you will consider it very seriously, because your thinking will be, if he's charging that much, he's got the balls to do it and he must have something to back it up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Similar with the dog thing. If you're charging, say, 8 quid for the dog to have like a half an hour walk or a half an hour play session or something, you're gonna attract that £8 buyer, right? You're gonna attract somebody who's only really interested in the dog having a piss, and do you know what I mean? They're not, you know. Yeah. Whereas the other section of the market will be saying, like, you're going to do what for 8 quid, won't they? Do you know what I mean? Like, you're going to come all the way out here and see the dog, and that, you know, it just doesn't compute, does it?
No, I mean, I guess a little bit like going back to relationships and dating, you'll get what you settle for.
Yeah.
And people will treat you how you allow them to. You know, it's if you are looking for £8 dog walking clients, that's what you'll get. And you know, here's something that people need to understand. Everyone listens to this, because we've all done it. I've done it. I don't do it now. Or if I do, I do it in passing and in the process of kicking them out of my business. But think something that everyone needs to understand is listening to this, but everyone in business really, is this. Everybody you do business with, everybody, without doubt. So, you know, all your vendors, your customers, your clients, everybody, without exception, two things are true. One is they are in your business because you invited them in. You invited them in. And the second thing is they remain there because you consent to them remaining there. Now, no one makes you take on a customer or a client. And don't tell me you need the money, because you don't need the money that badly. You never do. No business at all is much better than bad business. Trust me. So you invited them all in. And if they remain because you don't say, I'm not going to buy from you anymore, I'm not going to sell to you anymore, you are consenting to them staying. So any behavior they exhibit towards you, apart from maybe the very first time they do it, is down to you, really, because you're accepting it, you're condoning it. That's a really powerful thing to get your head around.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And it also follows on, and this is all part of positioning. One of the things I've done in my life and my business is I have taken full responsibility for everything that happens to me, even when it's not my fault. Like last year when I had the problems with my autism and the anxiety, there were loads of reasons for it, but ultimately the person responsible for taking the meds and going through the process of fixing it was me, because nobody else, you know, nobody else is going to do it for me. So it was down to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you can go, I think that, that sort of taking responsibility thing, what you just said about inviting people in, I think you can go two ways with it. You can either stick your head in the sand, can't you, and just say, this is the way it is. Or it can actually be quite liberating, can't it, to think, yeah, do you know what, actually, these people are here. I need to fucking up my game. Do you know what I mean? I need to change things here and hope, you know, so it's either they kick up the arse or, and I guess that's why people they either want to learn more, don't they, or they stick their head in the sand.
It's quite scary, but you're absolutely right. It's very liberating, because you think, because on the one hand, you're responsible for everything and you're responsible for fixing it, okay, in your own mind. But that also means that your actions are not constrained by the desires of others. I mean, you shouldn't infringe other people's rights, so you shouldn't harm them and damage their property or defraud them in their contracts. But there are no other crimes you can commit. So just pissing them off because you won't do business with an £8 dog walk buyer, well, that's entirely up to you. I mean, yeah, they won't like it, and people will piss and moan on Facebook and say, oh, he charges too much. Well, no, what you're actually saying is he charges too much for you. Yeah? It's not that he charges too much anyway, it's that you can't afford it. That's what you're saying. Because if they here's the thing, if they didn't want your service, they wouldn't care how much it costs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're pissing and moaning at your prices because they want it and can't have it. Well, fuck you. Now, I'm in business to make a fucking profit, not please people who can't afford me. You see?
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, you know what I do. Yeah, I love it. So let's get back into positioning then, John. What can people, because I've noticed, I mean, I feel like I'm ever changing, I suppose, in my business. I suppose we all are, aren't we, when we're learning and stuff. Yeah. But I've noticed some big changes with some of my guys in the pet business inner circle, because they're carrying themselves different, their attitudes different, you know, they're more confident, they're not taking as much shit from people. Do you know what I mean? How do you is positioning something that can be taught, you know, and how would you kind of go, or I suppose, sure, can it be learned? You know, premier positioning. How do you go about it? What can people do?
Well, at first it's going to be difficult because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, and there are things you need to internalize, things such as everything that happens to you is your responsibility, whether it's your fault or not is not the point, it's down to you to fix. Not worrying too much about what people say. These things are difficult to get your head around and they take time for you to accept. Okay. But the things you can do, it's almost like fake it till you make it. You can start doing some things that have an outward effect and doesn't really matter what's going on inside, such as one, and this is the easiest one, is just put your prices up. That's the first thing, because that solves a lot of problems straight away. So you put your prices up, and you keep doing it until you start getting some serious price resistance. And then you can either drop them back again or start thinking about how to better present them, because it's never about price, it's actually about value. And if someone's questioning your price, they're actually not questioning the price so much as saying you've not shown me sufficient value. So that is part of the first thing you can do. That will help your positioning. The second thing you can do, which is kind of not about price directly, is start thinking about how you present yourself. And the easiest way is to have a set of rules for yourself and your business. And this does two things. What it does is it makes it easy for you. And the second thing is it makes it easy for others too. And it takes away the emotional involvement. I'll give you an example of what I mean. In my business as a copywriter, I'm not a copywriter anymore. Well, I am, but I don't really work with clients one-on-one anymore, but the rules would still apply. Some of the rules were, and indeed in my business now, these rules still exist. For instance, rules are, you don't just phone me. Okay, we speak by appointment. That's it. The only people who phone me are my wife, sometimes my kids, and maybe someone like a handyman if I've given him a number I need him to talk to him. But now I've got the relationship with him, I would tell him these times I call, don't call him the other time. And I'd rather do it my email. But my clients and my customers, they do not call me ever. If they do, I would ignore it and I would tell them don't call. We talk by appointment. And if you're more than 5 minutes late, we reschedule, because I'm not hanging around on the fucking phone waiting to talk to you. So you've got 5 minutes, and if you miss that, okay, let's reschedule. Speak to my assistant. Well, that then makes it very simple, because I don't have to worry about, should I answer this? Should I not answer it? I just don't do it. I don't have to think about it. There are various businesses I won't do business with. I won't help anyone promote, say, homeopathy or other crackpot solutions or religion or anything like that. So if a client came to me, or a potential client came to me and says, hey, I'm selling this cancer cure, will you help me promote it? I don't have to think about it or get emotionally involved in how do I say no. I just say, no, my rules don't allow that to myself, and say no. So having rules in your business make it easy for you to not get emotionally involved in all this stuff. Because it is quite difficult, I'll give you that. Like, it can be. It's not difficult for me. It never has been. But that's because of the way I'm wired up. But everybody's got that privilege. But if you have rules in your business, then you can just, a query comes in, can you do me a discount? That's another rule. No, that's it. And it's not a question of should I or shouldn't I. It's, well, my rules don't allow it. Mm-hmm. And that's the internal conversation you have with yourself.
And it's very black and white, doesn't it?
Yes, it is. It makes it very simple. Mm-hmm. And of course, by having the rules presented to the outside, and you can literally write these down. I mean, if you look at my contact me page, it's quite draconian. You know, don't bother emailing me, I'm not going to respond, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, if you put that on the outside, you know, if you want to get in touch, you go through my assistant, or you fax me, or you write to me by snail mail. I don't answer questions unless you're paying me, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, that then positions you, because people know what they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And it shows that you're not a pushover. You're not one of these, the customer is always right people.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's the first and easiest thing you can do.
Yeah, yeah. And people respect that, don't they, as well? You know, you think that you're going to, well, I suppose people will fear doing that because they'll think, oh, I'm going to put people off. But it's actually, people just respect that, don't they? You know, they your serious clients do.
Absolutely. Yeah, of course, you're going to get people complain about it. You always do. But so what? Because if you say you have this rule, you got rules, say, you phone me, and like in your business, it might be necessary to answer the phone because that's how people do business. But you can have set times when they do it. They can phone and leave a message and you'll get back to them that evening, that kind of thing. So, you know, you don't have to pick up the phone straight away, but you can have someone else do it. But if that's the rule, anyone who pisses and moans about that, what they're actually saying is, I want you to run your business to suit me in my way. Well, why would you do that?
Yeah.
If you want that kind of dog walker, there's loads of them out there. Go to that person instead. And the thing is, while pushing people away is actually attractive.
Yeah.
I mean, this will wind up every woman who's listening to this, I'm sure, because they know it's true. One of the best ways to get a woman chasing after you is to say to her, look, I think you're quite attractive, but I think we should just stay friends. And it drives them nuts, because again, it's I mean, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek there, but the principle's valid. It's because you don't find me attractive, yeah, you're okay, but I'd rather be friends. I'm not thinking about you in that way. Well, they will then make it their business to make sure you do think about me in that way. Okay, like I say, a little bit tongue-in-cheek and I'm generalizing, yeah. But you see the principle.
Yeah, for sure. People
like striving for what they don't have. They want what they can't have. They want what they can't get. And they don't value what comes too easily.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, the thing to have in your head, and again, this will help your positioning too, is an idea to have in your head that you, when you do business with someone, they are not qualifying you to see if you are suitable to provide the service they want. Okay. In your head, you must think about, you are qualifying them to see if you want to do business with them. If they qualify to do business with you, if they qualify and they are good enough to give you their money so you can help them. That's what I've got in my head all the time. Now, whether it's correct or not, isn't the point. If you have that idea in your head, then it will translate to your attitude, your bearing, the way you write, the way you present yourself, everything. Mm-hmm. No downside.
Yeah, 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 definitely. And, So you're talking about like walking the walk a little bit and having some actual rules in place, putting some rules in place that you have and that your clients have as well, and then that makes it very black and white. I think that's a fantastic place to start. Do you know what I mean, for most people, because it does grow, doesn't it? You know, the more you walk the walk or talk the talk, whatever it is, you know, you, like I said before, yes. I feel like I'm a completely different business owner than I was 2-3 years ago. You know, and I've no doubt I'll be more confident and stuff in a year or two's time. Do you know what I mean? And I'm starting to see these changes with the people who I'm helping as well, you know?
Well, what you'll find is this. Everyone will find this. It's the same with all the marketing. I mean, they talk about, say, daily emails is a good example. People resist doing that and they feel uncomfortable. When they do it and they start making more money, it becomes a game to them. You know yourself, it works like magic. Mm. You start mailing every day in a certain way and all of a sudden you make more money and you think, fuck, this is really good. And then you start thinking, well, how obnoxious can I be in my emails and still make money? I mean, you know this is true. Mm. But in the same way, you know, the point I'm making there is nothing is better, nothing is more motivating than getting results. So when you start positioning yourself, you raise your prices, you have this set of rules that you state explicitly or they're implicit, or you allude to them in your website and things about hours that you call, you're allowed to call, and you know, you maybe have your phone set up so when people do call, they get this message. It's amazing. And you only give your clients an emergency number. That's for emergencies only. An emergency is not, oh, can you come 10 minutes earlier? That's not an emergency. That's your problem. When you start doing that, it will be uncomfortable at first, and you'll think, oh, I feel really awkward about this. And so-and-so down the road was talking in the pub, I heard, and said that she didn't like it, and someone made a nasty comment on Facebook. That, I get it, that won't be very nice. And you might think, should I go back to my old way of doing business? No, because when you start getting the results you want, such as getting better customers, making more money, being treated with more respect, getting better compliance from your dog walking clients, all those things, when you start getting the results you want, you'll start thinking, fuck, this is actually quite good. I quite enjoy this.
Definitely, yeah.
I can do more of it.
Yeah, you really do.
And eventually it will become part of just the person you are. Mm-hmm. It's like any habit, really. I mean, there's a great book everyone here should read, listen to this and read. It's called The Power of Habit by a guy called Charles Duhigg, D-U-H-I-G-G. And basically nearly all of our lives are based around habitual actions. And you actually can't destroy a habit, you can only change it. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is, a habit, once you get into it, doesn't go away either, unless you consciously change it. And you don't even know it's there most of the time. So if you get into the habit of doing these things, and it may take a couple of months, because someone says it's, you read in some places it can be up to 7 days to create a new habit. That's bullshit, it's nearer 60, mm-hmm. near to 60 days. But once you've got that habit, it's there. And it'll just become part of the way you do things. And you won't care if people are pissing and moaning about you on Facebook. And you will actually get to the point that you're at now, I've noticed recently, where you actually enjoy it.
Take a pride in it.
Yeah, I mean, I was over the moon when I used to get. I don't get them anymore because I think I've done it so well, people are afraid to. Because yeah. You'll get to say, well, why would I do business with someone so obnoxious? Well, obviously you wouldn't, and I don't care. Yeah. Do you remember that spat I had with Bob Bly?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's a classic example of it. He was trying to throw his weight around, and he had a lot of it as well. I think I called him a fat cunt, didn't I?
Yes.
Trying to throw his weight around. I am the big I am. How dare you speak to me like that? And I was just saying, Bob, I don't care. I don't want your customer. I don't care what you think. I don't care what your customers think. I don't care what you say about me on social media, because anybody who listens to it and cares about it isn't the kind of person we're living with anyway. And it took him a long time to get that, but you know what? He messaged me back and said, will you put me back on your list again? Because he realized it. I think to all credit to the guy, yeah. He went away and he thought about it.
Yeah.
And maybe he spoke to some people, maybe he watched me in from the sidelines and thought, actually, yeah, I get why he's doing that now. Yeah. Now, I could have stopped and explained it to him. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should have done, because he's got a big audience. Maybe I could have spoken to those and put myself out there like I'm doing with you now. But I couldn't be bothered.
I
find it much more enjoyable to have this fucking spat with him. But yeah, to be fair to the guy, he did learn.
Yeah, respect for that. You touched upon something there, John, which I'm going to want to explore a little bit. You know, a lot of the people when they, a lot of it, I think is like I sort of default. Positioned myself very well with the pricing and stuff, but then obviously there's more that I've learned, and a big part of that for me was like being mentored by yourself, and coming to Ireland and stuff, and just hanging around with fucking smart people who thought the same way as I did. Do you know what I mean? Who were gonna have positive influence. I think this is that helps you sort of build a habit, doesn't it, as well, where you because not necessarily the people in the Peppers in a circle, the people who are maybe thinking about joining it and stuff, they're hanging around with real plebbish business owners in these free Facebook groups, and it's like, what are you charging? I'm charging this, and everyone, it's just fucking ordinary. It's the blind leading the blind, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So
yes.
How important is that then? The average of the people you hang around with, because it's preaching now.
How important. It's absolutely vital. Jim Rohn, he's dead now. Lovely chap. I liked him because he was one of the very few men I've ever met who's shorter than I am.
Bloody hell.
But he used to say you are the average of the five people closest to you. How he got five, I don't know. He just pulled it out of his ass. But he's correct in that you are the average of the people you hang around with. I used to be a nightclub doorman, as you know, and I did it for quite a few years. But I found, and coincidentally, it was when my eldest daughter was born, I found myself becoming more like, because I was a different kind of doorman. I'm small, I'm quite approachable, I'm eloquent, I was quite amusing. I know I could be violent because I used to teach martial arts, but I was dead easygoing, really. I was firm, but I wasn't aggressive, you know, with it. Uh-huh. But I found myself becoming more like your stereotypical thuggish doorman because of the people I was hanging around with. So I'd stopped working with them. I just didn't do it anymore. Uh-huh. That wasn't the kind of role model I wanted for my kids. Because I was turning nasty, to be fair. I'm going back 20 years or more.
Yeah.
I didn't like what I was becoming. Well, in the same way as, you know, if you hang around in Facebook groups with negative, low-priced people with shit customers who were pissing and moaning, it necessarily rubs off on you. Mm-hmm. I joined a few autism support groups on Facebook a while back just to see what's going on there, and I don't really get involved with them much because a lot of them are just whinging crybabies. They expect the world to change for them. Well, if I wasn't careful, that could start happening to me. Oh, it's so unfair. Why didn't everyone change your comment?
Victim mentality.
So I don't really get involved, but if I do, I just give them my tough love. You know, suck it up, buttercup. The world ain't going to change for you. By the same token, if you say join masterminds or like your pet inner circle, I've got my own inner circle, I've got my own mastermind elite that you've been part of. If you join that, what you're doing is you are joining groups with people with similar mindsets to yourself. Now, I want to be very clear about these kind of things because it's really important. It's not that there is value in looking outside your in-group for ideas and things, because what we do run the risk of doing is we become insular in a group and we lose sight of what's possible outside. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, say you're in your pet business. Well, it's not just other pet business owners who are going to be boring and pissing and moaning about their customers and clients and charging low prices. But your family are also like that. And the people down the pub are also like that. And the people, the civilians, if you like, not in business life, well, they are like that too. Joining a mastermind enables you in the context of business to rub shoulders with people who think similarly to you, often have more experience or at least equivalent experience, but maybe in different areas where you don't have experience. It allows you to mesh with these people, to talk to them, and kind of even share the... For fuck's sake, I can't stand the people down the pub. They're so fucking negative. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. Mm. It's priceless. I mean, my business, when I started going to my own, not my masterminds, but other people's masterminds, it changed things completely for me. And it's changed the lives of people who then come into my mastermind. You know, I've seen people, like the guy who's literally just joined Elite. I mean, he did something he would never have done before. He did one campaign selling those really fucking cheap sunglasses to watch the solar eclipse, but he did it in a way with you had never done it before. He made $75,000 selling that shit. You know, people come in, they get new ideas, they mix with people who've had similar problems, they have got similar understandings of business and things, but sometimes better understandings, and they make more money. And the other thing is, when you get a good group, like I'm sure you have, because you've got the early adopters, and they are the people to listen to. You get a lot of support that's got nothing to do with business as well. We had a guy before Christmas who had severe marriage difficulties, and he was almost in tears in his hot seat. He spilled his heart out, and he got some pretty fucking painful advice, but he went back and did what he was supposed to do. And the upshot is that his marriage is actually okay. They both wanted the same thing, but neither wanted to say that or what it was, because they thought the other one didn't want it. You know, his life has been turned around, and he had his best month ever in December, which was 3 weeks after we met last time. So it's invaluable. I mean, anyone listen to this, if you're not a member of a mastermind, not mine, because if you're going to join one, join Dom's, because he's got the more specific knowledge. But even if you don't join Dom's, get together with like-minded people and people who are negative and the rest of it, ignore them. Because what they will do is negative people will stridently demand you listen to their opinions.
Yeah, And it's such a fucking lonely place sometimes, isn't it, being a business owner? That, like, it's very easy. It's very easy to just get a couple of – it's like owning a dog, I suppose. You know, you don't have to get much bad advice from people who know fuck all about dogs to completely fuck your dog up. You know, well, it's similar with your business, isn't it? If you're not surrounding yourself with people who are – you know, we were doing the right kind of things that we're, or living the kind of lives and running the kind of business that you want to run, you know, it just rubs off on you.
Yeah, well, I'm conscious we're coming to the end of the time we've got now, yeah. But here's a really good point. People will ask for advice from the most unqualified people. In the same way that people, they're looking for someone to fill a role in employment in their business, they will often choose the person that's most convenient to them, say maybe a family member or a friend. Or someone that someone knows, you know, mm-hmm. My daughter, she's looking for work. They won't actually choose the right person and go through a process of selecting the right person. But in the same way, some people looking for business advice, they'll maybe say, put together a marketing piece or an email, and they'll ask their wife or their husband, mm-hmm. their kids, the neighbor, the guy down the pub, some random person on a Facebook group who's got no clue. They'll ask loads of people's advice, but never think, is this person qualified to give me an opinion? Now, a good example is my wife. She knows quite a bit about marketing and she helps in my business. And I might ask her opinion in some respects, things like about the emotional side of things, because I'm not too good at that. But when I'm writing stuff, but when it comes down to it, I don't ask her business opinion on strategy, because no matter how close we are or how much she works in the business, she is simply not qualified to give me advice or an opinion on marketing strategy. And so why would I ask it? You know, it's got nothing to do with my relationship with her, but why would I ask the opinion of someone who's not qualified to give it? Just because she's my wife does not qualify her to have a valid opinion when it comes to marketing. Well, that sounds really cold and clinical, but it's true. Uh-huh. You wouldn't ask your fucking spouse about, well, how do I treat this pancreatic cancer I've got? You'd go to a fucking oncologist. Well, it's the same with business. Why would you ask someone unqualified about your business? You shouldn't. You should go to someone like you or like me or anyone else out there who actually knows what they're talking about. Uh-huh. That's why you join a mastermind, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. The benefits are many, aren't they? But yeah, that's probably the most powerful reason, is that you're probably wasting your fucking time if you really aren't. You know, you're certainly not going to move forward. You might even move backwards. You know,
because I almost guarantee if you say to everyone listening to this goes home and asks their spouse or significant other, should I put my prices up by 10%? They'll all say no. Well, I'm going to do that. Why? Well, you might lose some customers. Oh, yeah, because you're completely unqualified. I listen to you.
Yeah, yeah. That's right, yeah. And that, like, this is the, I mean, I see this every day. Not in my group, but in these other groups, you know. It's like, what would people charge for this? And then there's like 35, 40, sometimes 50, 60 comments from people who are all saying, charge, you know, this price, which is usually, you know, probably half the price or three quarters of the price of what I would be telling them to charge, you know, or suggested even. It's just, it fucking, it
blows my mind. It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. And anyway, John, I know you're a busy man. So I want to thank you very much for your time today. It's been, always fantastic talking to you. And I'll just finish just by saying as well, you can add something if you want, John, but you know, this is, it is uncomfortable at first, this positioning thing, and pricing is a big way to do it. I was uncomfortable when I was starting to learn things from John, and you have to push yourself a lot and stuff as well. I'm sure probably you were, John, back in the day when you first did these things as well, but it's so fucking worth it, isn't it?
It's the best thing I ever did. I mean, I went to, my life changed when I came back from a Dan Kennedy thing, and I had three clients at the time, and I sacked two of them because they weren't good enough. And I spent, my wife said that she was in the office at the time and back in England, and she said, we can't afford that. And I said, I can't afford not to. And I said, I'm going to spend the time that I've just freed up, I'm going to spend trying to get this particular guy called Scott Tucker, because I want him as a client. Gave himself, I think it was 3 months. I did it within 6 weeks. I got him on board. My business took off after that because he was in Dan Kennedy's The Mastermind.
Yeah.
And he referred me to all of his platinum fellow mastermind members. And this is a really high level thing. Mm-hmm. He referred me to all of those. And my association with some of those guys is what basically brought in my top people that I've got still now. You know, some of these guys have known me for 10 years mm-hmm. and they're in my group. They've been in it for 5 years, things like that. So that's another thing about the power of masterminds. You know, it wasn't my mastermind, but it was someone else's. Referrals and stuff. But yeah, that was all down to positioning. I'm not going to deal with these scumbags anymore. I'm going to get rid of them and I'm going to have some decent clients instead.
Yeah.
Changed my life, mate. That's why I'm here sitting in this fabulous office in Ireland.
Stroking a dog, no doubt.
No, they're in the house at the moment. I'm not going to go to the money, it's cool. But... All right, dude.
Brilliant. All right, my friend. Well, thank you very much again. I'm going to wrap it up now and I'll speak to you soon, John. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye. Have you stopped?